I'm 36 years old, I love my family, I love baseball, and I'm about to become a farmer. But until I heard the voice, I'd never done a crazy thing in my whole life.
Ladies and gentlemen, August Donnelly.
Folks, you're listening to CHRW 94.9 FM. I am August Donnelly, and this is Full Frontal. Thank you for tuning in. With me, as always, is the one and only Full Frontal intern, Barb. Barb, how are you?
Doing pretty well. Thanks for asking, August. Starting to get used to the hang of things.
Getting used to the hang of things. You've been here for a while now, a couple of months now. I'd say you're doing a pretty good job. The folks seem to like you.
I'm getting pretty comfortable.
That's good. I'm glad to hear your comfort level is at an adequate ebb.
Ebb?
Like the ebb of a tide?
Stop using big words.
But that's just a little word. It's only three letters.
Whatever.
All right. Anyway, Barb, before we get down to things, I have to mention that we have a great show lined up. As always, I like to... be famous by self-appointment, I suppose you could say, and the show is always good in my opinion, and thankfully in the opinions of others, otherwise I guess I wouldn't be on the air. Anyway, this week I'm joined by Roop Chandradat. He is the co-owner and field manager and general manager of the London Majors semi-pro baseball team, who play, of course, down at Labatt Park in the Intercounty Baseball League.
Sounds like a pretty cool job.
It is a pretty cool job, actually, and I got to meet with Roop and, of course, went around the park, and he's a very gregarious, outgoing guy, and I have to say thanks again to him for being on the show. But, it was neat. We got to go down to Labatt Park. Well, I shouldn't say we. I went down to Labatt Park and looked around and got to check out things behind the scenes, and, it's one of those places that people from southwestern Ontario have probably been many times, but, again, like any sports venue or theatrical venue or gallery or whatever, you don't really appreciate things until you get to go behind the scenes and see where things happen.
Yeah, so I guess if people are interested in learning a little bit more about the behind-the-scenes action, then they should listen to the rest of the show.
Absolutely, and that will be coming up in the latter half as per usual. But let's get down to the current events, as we always do. One thing that I have to shake my head at and laugh and who knows what else my social reactions would be to this particular event. As folks have probably heard in the media and you yourself, Barb, what about our good friend Madonna, the legendary Material Girl, and her ongoing assumed love affair with Alex Rodriguez, the wealthiest baseball player in world history? What do you think of that, Barb? Are you a Madonna fan? I think if I'm not mistaken, you are a Madonna fan, are you not?
I am a huge Madonna fan. She was my childhood idol. I put on dance shows for my family and friends. With my sister, we would dress up in, spandex pants, oversized shirts, bangle bracelets, side ponies. I knew all the moves, all the songs. Big Madonna fan right
there.
As for her love life, I don't know. At this point, I don't really care. I still love her, still love her music, and what she does behind closed doors doesn't make a difference to me. Although, Guy Ritchie is quite the looker, so I don't understand why she would have to veer away from that at all.
This is entirely true. Guy Ritchie is not only a good-looking guy, I guess, as a man's man, being comfortable with where I'm at, I can say that Guy Ritchie's a good-looking fella, but he's also highly intelligent and very talented. He's put out some kick-ass movies. If you haven't seen them, folks, you should be watching Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. You should be watching Snatch. I mean, these are fantastic movies with brilliant dark comedy and satire, and it's not like the guy's hurting for money. I mean, between the two of them, they've got hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. Sure, our friend A-Rod, Alex Rodriguez of the New York Yankees, is a wealthy, talented, decent-looking young guy himself, but again, if you've already got filet mignon at home, why are you going out for hamburgers or even the equivalent?
Well, I do know that Madonna does have a thing for the Latin lovers, so that might have a thing to do with it. I do recall in an old documentary with Madonna going on tour, she did have quite a big crush on Antonio Banderas, this might be that Latin thing coming in again.
This is true, but isn't Antonio Banderas about 5'6"?
Yes, but I'm sure he makes up for his height in other ways.
Ooh, touche. Yeah, anyway, I just thought that was kind of a funny thing to bring up. But other big news in the world of sports, of course, the Beijing Olympics are coming up. They're going to be starting soon. And apparently in China, this has been ongoing now for weeks, if not months, they've been closing petrochemical factories and mills and things like that to reduce the pollution in the air in Beijing, which, from what I've heard from friends and relatives who've visited there, is essentially like trying to breathe pea soup to begin with, and actually looks quite a bit like pea soup. So, I don't know. What do you think about that, Barb? Is it going to make any difference?
Well, I actually heard that they're even lowering the cost of public transportation to try to get people to take buses rather than driving their cars. So there are a lot of different measures that they're taking to try to reduce the pollution. But from what I know about it and what experts are saying, even though they're taking these drastic measures and putting a lot of Chinese workers out of work for quite some time, even at their very best efforts, if they can reduce this pollution, it's still going to be terrible when compared to world standards. It's still going to be, you know, twice the pollution of New York. So,
and if I can interrupt you for a second, Barb, I believe that's what one expert actually cited. It's actually, regardless how much they try and what their efforts extend to between now and the start of the Olympics, the pollution in Beijing is still twice as bad as New York City.
Yes. So they're hoping that these efforts are going to make a difference. They're hoping for rain. They're hoping for wind to try to clear it out. You know, also that, you know, the athletes can perform to the best of their ability. I'm just wondering, you know, did they not think of this when they were making the decision as to where to have the Olympics?
Literally years ago.
They're just thinking of this now. And, you know, my heart only goes out to all those people that actually live in China on unpaid vacation so that this special event can happen.
In other news, on kind of a brighter note, it's a point of interest that I have mixed emotion about. It's with mixed emotion that I bring this next point to light. Jay Leno, as people probably know, is leaving The Tonight Show. He's announced his retirement effective next late spring, early summer, 2009. And if I'm not mistaken, Jay Leno is leaving and Conan O'Brien will be taking over The Tonight Show. So we've gone from Johnny Carson to Jay Leno to now Conan O'Brien.
Three very different personalities.
Exactly. Very, very different. My biggest thing is, what do you think with Conan O'Brien? Will they let Conan O'Brien be as zany and off the cuff and off the wall and out of left field as he currently is on the Conan O'Brien Show? Or will he have to tone it down a little bit and it's The Tonight Show with Conan O'Brien and he'll be... I mean, don't get me wrong. Johnny Carson was outrageous and hilarious for his time and a genius of comedy in many regards. Leno is obviously funny. He still sells out as a stand-up comedian. But they're very, very different. They're much more reserved as far as an individual than Conan O'Brien. So what do you think?
I think that the networks are going to hold him back a little bit in terms of his zaniness.
Yeah.
You know, you have to remember that the Conan show was on at a later time slot. So it had a much different audience than The Tonight Show would have. And, you know, we're talking about a huge franchise here with a lot of money and a lot of things at stake here. They've got a lot riding on this. So I don't think they're going to let him go as far as he would on his own show, which is too bad because that's what made him who he is. But we'll have to watch and see what happens.
Yeah, I think regardless, I mean, he's talented enough. He spent years as a writer on The Simpsons, which of course is one of the funniest shows in television history. I think he's talented and resourceful enough that it'll still be good regardless. It just may not be, you know, the same old Conan. But, you know, this is funny, though. This is in relation to comedy. This is genuinely funny before we get down to the interview here, folks. This is perhaps, you know, a play on the guy's surname, perhaps Darwinism at its best, or social Darwinism, or whatever you want to call it. Did you hear about John Darwin in England?
Yes, I did, actually.
So I don't need to tell you, of course, but I'll tell the listeners. A gentleman from the UK, from England specifically, named John Darwin, recently turned himself into local authorities after collecting a £250,000, so approximately $500,000 Canadian life insurance policy, after successfully faking his own death. His wife was in on the plot. The whole thing was well schemed and thought out. Anyway, in England, apparently they refer to kayaking as canoeing, despite the differentiation here in Canada. Anyway, John Darwin died supposedly at sea in a canoeing / kayaking accident and had been hiding out, despite police conducting an extensive search for months on end. He'd been hiding out in his own house. So I hate to make fun of British police or Scotland Yard or whoever was involved, but does it not seem a little bit sad that the guy was hiding behind a door that led into a small alcove into his house? I mean, this wasn't even like Anne Frank, you know, hiding in the annex from the Nazis in Holland. This was not a hidden room, per se. He just happened to slip into a back room anytime family or friends or guests came over or the police, and this guy successfully carried this on for ages. Him and his wife buggered off to Panama and lived on, like I said, approximately $500,000 Canadian or U.S., you know, for quite a long time, lived very, very comfortably, and I guess the whole thing was he got caught because eventually he was guilt-stricken and turned himself in. But again, how extensive is the search if you're hiding out in your own house?
At the same time, though, he did live in a rather large house. They were quite well off. So
this is true.
The part that bothers me most about this story is that they were comfortable faking this death to their own family and friends. And they were okay with the fact that those people had to go through such a very difficult grieving process, you know, to know that their father had died and all that, and also that they could have an early retirement.
Exactly. Can you imagine? I mean, first of all, they're well off to begin with. So $500,000 in this day and age, it's a lot of money, but it's certainly not, you know, a windfall. And there's the other thing. He convinced, or I shouldn't say he, but the wife, who was also in on the scam, his spouse, convinced their own offspring, their own children, that the guy was dead. Can you imagine being told your father or mother is dead? You go, like you said, through the grieving process and denial and acceptance and everything else, and it turns out it was to collect £250,000, and he pissed off to the Caribbean? Thanks, Dad.
I mean, to be honest, morally speaking, I don't really have a problem with them, you know, wheeling and dealing with the insurance company. Insurance companies make lots of money, but the fact that they did that to their own children, that's what's really low for me. And I'll be surprised if those kids ever forgive their mother and father for doing that.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's nothing more that can be said about that. Again, it's what's the greatest sadness of all? Is it the fact that the police couldn't find him in his own house, or is it the fact that his own children were convinced he was dead? I don't know. Anyway, without further ado, let's get down to the interview I mentioned at the beginning of the show. I'm joined by Arup Chandradat, the General Manager, Field Manager, Manager Extraordinaire, and co-owner of the London Majors Semi-Professional Baseball Club, right here in London, Ontario. They have a storied history dating back over 80 years. Give it a listen. And of course, if you have questions or comments, you know what to do. Send me an email at august@chrwradio.com, and I will get back to you in as timely a fashion as time permits. What do you say, Barb? Shall we give it a listen?
Let's give it a listen.
Folks, I'm on site at Labatt Park, joined by Arup Chandradat, the co-owner and general manager of the London Majors. Arup, thanks a lot for making some time for the show.
No problem at all. Thanks for having me.
So, Arup, just a few quick questions about yourself. How did you first get involved with baseball?
Actually, when I came to Canada in 1977, or London specifically, played cricket. I'm from Guyana, South America. Used to be a British colony, and
okay.
Came here. No cricket, so got into baseball. Next bat ball sport kind of thing.
Yeah, and of course baseball, they think, evolved from cricket to some extent.
Correct.
Now, how long have you been with the London Majors organization yourself?
Probably been about 12, 13 years. So I played for about 10 years,
okay.
And then I've been manager now for, this is going to be my fourth year.
Okay, so for a while now, anyway.
Yeah, correct.
Now, what can you tell the listeners about the players on the team this year, maybe in comparison to years past? You know, are they from a broad range of localities, and do they have differential, you know, sports backgrounds or differing sports backgrounds, and kind of do they share like a team dynamic, or what's the team like this year?
Well, since I've taken over, our team's made up of kind of two different people or two different sectors. It's ex-pro guys and also guys that are top-notch college players. That's the kind of players I want here. The college guys are looking to get drafted or move on to a higher level of baseball, and the ex-pro guys still want to play a high level of baseball, and we offer that here. And also, in saying that, breaking it down further, we have both local guys from London and surrounding area. Then we bring in imports. We're allowed to have three imports this year. We have a guy from Japan, Toshi Sasa, Christian Ruiz from Puerto Rico, and Mason Riley from California and USA.
Oh, okay, so all over the globe, literally. Now, like you said, a lot of top-notch players come through the gates here at Labatt Park. As people may or may not know, some famous players have ended their careers here with the London Majors following their tenure in Major League Baseball. Could you maybe tell the listeners about some of the names they may recognize or guys that have come through here?
I guess the one big name that comes off the top of my head, Fergie Jenkins, won 20 games in the Major Leagues, 8 seasons. So Fergie's a big name from Chatham. So Fergie came here after his playing days, and You know, he hit. He was mostly a DH first baseman here, and I think he did pitch a little bit. So Fergie Jenkins would be one of the big names. And then there's so many as far as kind of local guys that got their trade here in London and playing in Labatt Park. So there's been quite a few players that come through, both with the majors and other teams that have been here at Labatt Park.
And obviously Fergie Jenkins is huge, like you said, because he's not only in the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame, but also in Cooperstown.
The Cooperstown Baseball Hall of Fame, where the MLB guys hang out.
Yeah, so he's enshrined to the same degree as Ty Cobb and Babe Ruth and all those guys.
Correct. So Fergie's, and I just seen Fergie recently at the All-Star game, and man, he looks like he's in good shape.
Yeah, it's amazing how those guys keep it together when they play at that level for so many years. Speaking of playing at that level, in your opinion, what does it take to play baseball at this level, at the London Majors level? How much of it is natural talent, would you say, and how much is just dedication, hard work, and really practicing your butt off?
I think it's both. You need some talent. But there's guys that really work hard and to improve. You need to do that. At this level now, you've got to be focused and dedicated to baseball year-round. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much a year-round sport at this time. And you've had to have the fundamentals taught to you when you were younger and also being able to apply your trade at a school.
Yeah.
That's why to play at this level, you've almost got to be playing U.S. college ball, so where you're getting coached properly and to move on to this level.
So you guys don't necessarily, not that you don't accept, but you don't have walk-ons per se that come in off the street and have just this raw natural ability?
Rare, if any. I mean, we don't hold open tryouts. I do get a lot of emails and applications mm-hmm. for people looking, and I go through and see if they're if they've played anywhere significant mm-hmm. and if not, then typically no. But if somehow someone convinces me they can play, I bring them out to one of our workouts and we try them out there. But typically no, we won't have a 25-man roster, so try to fill those up with highly recruited guys.
Yeah, well, I guess like I said, it's not so much it's nothing personal. It's just a matter of you've either got the experience and skills or you don't. It's
exactly the London Majors and this league. Like I've played in it now. Pretty much everyone on our team is either, like I said, playing in a U.S. college or on a scholarship or played ex-pro. So it's come a long way. When I played, there was four or five guys that played U.S. college. So
right.
It's come a long way from what it has been in the past.
Yeah, it's funny getting it. I mean, I've been to many majors games myself. I'm a huge baseball nut, as any of my listeners know, and friends and whatever else. But it's funny when you sit in the stands, even as a baseball fan and a guy who's played baseball at different levels, obviously never professionally, but you don't really get an appreciation until you are on the field for just how fast the ball is moving, just how fast the plays are happening. It's real easy to be the armchair critic, I guess, and sit along the first baseline and, heckle the guy that dropped the ball or struck out or,
That is so true. I mean, I'm glad you said it. There's so many people sitting in the stands or, in front of their TV that don't realize what it takes to hit a ball. Take, for example, Josh Palmer, our pitcher. He throws anywhere between 88 and 92 miles an hour.
And that's fast.
Till you step in, and that's with the ball coming straight, and then you throw in a curveball or a changeup. It's tough to do that. It's tough to hit a baseball until you're actually on the field or a ground ball coming at you pretty hard.
Yeah.
So, no, till you don't get an appreciation until you actually try it and see how difficult it is.
And I find the ones that I've had a couple of friends that have played for U.S. colleges and stuff like that, different positions, and not so much the speed. I mean, that's intimidating enough, but it's almost worse when you get a guy like, I'm just thinking of like a major league example, like Tim Wakefield that plays for the Red Sox. You get a knuckleball pitcher. And that almost screws you up even more because you're expecting the ball to come in at, 90, 95 miles an hour. All of a sudden, it's coming in at 60 miles an hour, and you're ready and you're swinging way too early and, making a complete ass of yourself as you corkscrew into the ground.
Oh, definitely. And that's why pitchers that have good command and good change of speed, you can go from a 90 mile an hour fastball to a 70 something mile an hour changeup or a curveball. Those guys are tough to hit.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, I've had a couple of friends. I had a friend actually that played in the New York Mets organization for their farm team, and even though he was a second baseman, I mean, the guy, of course, being at that level, could catch pretty well, pitch pretty well, whatever, and just taking batting practice with him just for fun, it's something when the ball's coming in at around 90 miles an hour. It's
definitely, and it's sometimes it's a we have some fans that kind of get up close for some whatever reason or not. We might let them down for BP, and even there they, this is difficult.
So, Roop, the home field of the London Majors is Labatt Park. How long have the Majors been playing at this location?
1925. And to add to that, there's debate. I still don't know where they're at with this. Oldest active park in the world.
I was going to say, I've heard that. I was going to say that an interesting fact in relation to Labatt Park, and like, being a baseball buff and historian and whatnot, I've read a lot of information for and against, but they say that, yeah, Labatt Park has had some form of baseball, you know, professional or otherwise, like every year since 1877, I think it is.
Yes, correct. And I guess there's some debate, and I haven't followed it closely, whether home plate's been changed from, you know, home plate facing right where the outfield is now. They've kind of flipped directions and some other little things. But, you know, even so, it's been around a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's kind of a, I don't know, it seems nitpicky, but I mean, that's the way baseball fans are, right? They're very fickle. It's, you know, if home plate's moved at all, well, yeah, it's not the same park, you know.
Exactly.
Even though it's been on the same grounds for 130 years anyway. Now, in relation to that, though, like you said, baseball's been here for, you know, well over 100 years in some form or another. Does that give yourself and or the players a sense of dignity or nostalgia in relation to that, do you think, playing in a historic ballpark?
For sure. I mean, guys that come in here, like we bring, like you were talking earlier, bringing guys from all over different parts of the world. First thing they say, you know, nothing to even do with the age of the park, just how nice a park it is.
Mm-hmm.
And how excited they are to play a park, you know, kind of centered right in downtown, you know, over with the trees and the river right there, and just all the activity going on behind the park, you know, when we have the festivals and things like that. So that's one thing. And then, yeah, once they find out the age of the park, we had a sort of a celebration of the last majors team to win the pennant, and just to hear about those guys talk about the park, and players coming in, wow, this thing's been around, you know. We had the Negro League do their calendar one of their months from this park, and they got to see that. So the park has a lot of history, and that does help us, and the guys do, that kind of motivates them, I guess that's the right word, to want to do better here at this park.
Yeah, I guess, like you said, when it's so close to downtown, the river's right there, it makes you think of like Three Rivers in Pittsburgh, or the older ones like Fenway in Boston or Wrigley Field in Chicago. They're kind of right downtown.
Yep.
The old houses on the street, you know, like here on Wilson Ave, you've got the old Victorian homes lining the street, and then you've got, you know, Labatt Park smack right there, which is pretty cool. Now, the park itself can seat a pretty substantial crowd. You know, with that, you have attendance representative of all walks of life, of course. How would you describe the typical London fan, or, you know, without naming names, are there any special characters that make regular appearances at the ballpark that stand out in the crowd?
We have some fans that have been with us since I've played, because they always come up to show me. I've autographed the ball since I started, and other people. So we've got some fans that, you know, what I call, you know, they're diehards. They'll be here. We don't have to put anything out, no advertising, anything. They'll be here. They somehow know when we play and everything. And then we've got what I want to turn to newer generation fans, where, you know, it's the young kids that are coming out to our camps or whatever other function we have going on, and following the team and aspiring to play. So we've got two groups of fans. The diehards have been with us forever, and then the new generation of fans who we're trying to get to, and that's the younger kid. There are some fans out there that are quite, you know, they're different. you know, they email me with some weird suggestions, but, you know, but they are our fans nonetheless.
Yeah, so hopefully you don't get heckled too badly or anything too profane flying out of the crowd.
You know, once the game's on, you kind of tune all that out.
Yeah.
But there's times, you know, they do. Sometimes I wonder, you know, it seems when we win, there's a lot more said than when we lose, for whatever reason.
Well, I guess my curiosity has always been, if you're really that dissatisfied, stay at home. You know,
yeah,
watch the game on TV. Like, what are you coming down to the ballpark, paying your hard-earned money for, to sit here and, you know, and then buy your hot dog and your soda or whatever else just to complain?
Yeah, you know. Exactly. But you know what? Our fans, though, the majority of them, they've been great. Like,
yeah,
we've had some good crowds this year, and it really puts a different atmosphere into the game when there's a lot of people and they're all cheering. It feels like a playoff game almost every game, and the other team coming in, it helps them too, because they're jacked and pumped to play.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, most importantly, the season at hand. This season has seen our beloved Majors battling neck and neck with the Guelph Royals for the Intercounty Baseball League pennant, which, if I'm not mistaken, is London's first in 20 years.
Yeah, 1988 was the last Majors pennant, but then it was two divisions, so they won the Hamill division, so it wasn't a unified pennant. The last unified pennant was 1975. It was a pennant nonetheless for that division.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, this season, of course, has got to be pretty exciting being in that position again.
Oh, definitely. You know, it's, like I said, this is my third year coaching the team. First year went to the finals, which was great. Last year we took a little downturn, but at the same time we had four guys drafted by major league teams. And this year, you know, we're back at the top, and we had two guys drafted. So, you know, we do want to be one of those teams that year in, year out are either vying for the championship or right up there.
Now, in relation to that, all bias aside, what do you foresee for the playoffs, and what do you think London's chances are of winning it all for this season?
As far as the playoffs, I do like our chances. You know, this will probably be the toughest year in the playoffs. The seedings and the matchups are so close. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just anytime we get in the playoffs, is which team can get on a roll quicker, kind of overcome that one obstacle and get on a roll. I like our chances. We have a young team. The big thing going against us is injuries. We've got a couple of key guys injured right now.
Okay.
So hopefully they can get healthy after the first round, and we can get by the first round, then we can have those guys back for the second round.
Awesome. Now, if people are interested in coming to the game, for those that haven't been or aren't the regulars that we talked about, where can they find the game schedule, how much are tickets, that kind of thing?
The best way to get any information on our team is londonmajors.com.
Okay.
That's our website. If you look around the league and any other league, I think we have one of the best websites around, and it shows by the number of hits. We get over a million hits a month on our website during the season.
Over a million?
A million hits a month.
Wow.
During the season, and we have the stats to prove it.
Yeah.
I update the website, so I mean, you're going to get the latest, greatest information.
Yeah.
So if you go to londonmajors.com, that'll have all the information. The other way, if you're stuck, you don't have a computer, you know, it's usually the media covers our games or shows when we have it. And if all else fails, usually we play at home Friday nights at 7:30 Labatt Park. Any Friday night you come by here, we're pretty much playing.
Yep.
Or Saturday afternoons at 1 o'clock.
Okay, and tickets are how much?
Tickets for 6 and 4. $6 for adults and $4 for students and seniors.
Yeah.
Those prices might be increased $1 per ticket for playoffs. Just quite not sure on that right now.
Yeah, and the thing is, I mean, for $1, you can't really complain too much.
No.
I can, and again, given whatever credibility I have as, as people know, I can vouch for the fact that I've been to the majors games many times. They're a lot of fun, and I mean, you know, for $6 in this day and age, you can't go wrong. I mean, what are you going to buy for $6?
You got it. We always say for family entertainment, you know, $20, you know, family of four. Where are you going to get $20 for family entertainment? We have a lot going on, you know, base running for the kids, balloon tosses. We try to keep the fans interactive as part of the game. So there's lots going on. And kids have a great time when they come here. And the parents usually see a good baseball game.
Exactly. And I mean, like you said, for $20 for, say, a family of three or four, what are you going to get for $20 this day and age? Maybe a pizza or, gas for a day with the current price of gas.
Exactly.
Well, Roop, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate you being on the show.
No problem. Thank you very much for having me.
So, Barb, the interview with Roop Chanderdat, was it informative for you? Did you find out a thing or two about baseball in general?
I did, in fact. I didn't realize that the park was as old as it was.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that as many major leaguers had actually come through the majors organization, so... I wish you talked more about the hot dogs at the park, though.
you enjoy the ballpark franks, do you?
Yes, I do.
Yes. Did you know, actually, Barb, just as a quick aside, did you know that the word hot dog actually comes from the New York City Polo Grounds? That was the stadium that precursored Yankee Stadium back in the late 1800s. This is a little side tidbit for those that are interested in listening. The term hot dog comes from dachshund sausages. Like the dachshund dog, the wiener dog.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they were long, skinny sausage, so that's what they were called. And there was this German sausage vendor who was shouting out in the late 1800s, sometime in the 1880s, early 1890s maybe, get your dachshund sausages, they're red hot. That was the call he gave. And he put it on a bun, which was not traditional, so that his customers wouldn't burn their hands on the sausage. That's why a hot dog comes in a bun. Has nothing to do with the tastiness of it or anything else. It's dachshund sausages, get them, they're red hot, and it eventually became shortened down to hot dogs, and the bun is strictly a precautionary measure.
Oh, well, there you go. Useless facts by August Donnelly.
Exactly. Folks, I'm all out of time for another episode of Full Frontal right here on CHRW 94.9 FM. If you don't like kicking it old school via radio, you can always catch us on Rogers Digital Cable, channel 943, every other Monday night at 7:30 post-meridian. Until next time, if you have any questions for myself, or for the show, or for Barb, or for a guest, past or present, Email me at august@chrwradio.com or catch me online at www.augustdonnelly.com. Be sure to tune in next time, 2 weeks from tonight. You never know, you just might learn something.